We get to know a groundbreaking artist from South Dakota. Mata Wayuhi takes the mic for today's In the Moment. Coming up on the program, An Hour with Mato. He is a musician, a producer, a composer. He burst onto the entertainment scene while still in college and became a household name for his work composing for the award-winning Hulu series Reservation Dogs. In 2023, he was listed on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list in the Hollywood and entertainment category, but he got his artistic start in South Dakota. Before the University of Southern California's School of Cinematic Arts, he attended Lincoln High School in Sioux Falls. He was saved by music and fell in love with filmmaking, and we are still watching how Mata Wayuhi is redefining both genres. Music with Mata is after the break. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we are showcasing the musical career of Mata Wayuhi. I first met Mata in 2018. He'd been chosen as an NPR Tiny Desk Contest favorite. He was a South Dakota artist enrolled at the University of Southern California at the time, and he sat down in front of the microphone in the SDPB Sioux Falls studios. Our producers played the audio track into his headphones, and he introduced us to his sound. Since then, Mato has released several albums, graduated from college, and gained international recognition for his musical work on the feature film War Pony and the award-winning television series Reservation Dogs. This summer, he stopped by again to perform for public radio listeners upon the release of his 2024 album, Stankface Standing Soldier. Let's hear a little bit of that first SDPB performance, and then we'll get into our 2024 conversation.
This is Beeswax.
Mata Wayuhi.
Yeah. Big dreams stay locked, big climb, tall stock, jacked up, zoned in, alone, no kin, no friends and no hun, oh well, ho-hum, make room for beeswax, so hope I don't get stung, big dreams stay locked, big climb.
Welcome back to this little space.
Thank you.
2018, you were in here, we had a track playing, you were rapping over it, and we were blown away at who you were and the energy that you brought to the room and your lyrics and your cadence and everything. And it has been a singular delight to continue to follow what you did after that day. And you had done lots of stuff before you came to us, but that was the first time that I had met you. And it has been, so thank you, first of all, for giving us the opportunity to just get to know you.
Sorry, won't do it. Mama sending me internships. Those aren't getting pursued, and maybe I'm plaguing my future. At least I'm not plaguing myself. Can't be indebted to settle down. I've been bleeding for crowns. Wipe the smirking.
Yeah, my pleasure. I had a great time the first time, and so this was the first, you know, you're the first contact that I wanted to talk to about, you know, what's coming next.
Yeah, this is a big new release for you in a lot of different ways. Stankface Standing Soldier, which means it's good for people who don't understand Stankface. This is going to be good music that shows up on your facial expressions.
Yes.
And Standing Soldier is who you are. And so this is part of reclaiming a name and exploring an identity. So I want to talk to you about grief and identity and place, but let's start with the name.
Yeah, so I was so driven and inclined to explore that word for some reason, Stankface, and I started toying with that idea, I want to say like maybe early to mid-2021, and just the music I was making was rendering that feeling inside of me and on me, and through the music I just had this kind of like raucous energy, and it was interesting because it was at a time in my life when I maybe one wouldn't feel like that because just going through stuff, right? Grief, as you said, and everything. So I felt that I liked the contrast to that. Like, this is a very, you know, sensitive, vulnerable, kind of tarnished time in my life and yet I'm making this music that's very in your face, very mm-hmm. emphatic, very celebratory too, which I like that. So when I started knowing that it was an album, because, you know, I think I think a lot of artists will be like, oh, you know, this is going to be a single. And then you make a couple more. Oh, this could be an EP. And then there's a moment where it's kind of like you find out you're pregnant. You're like, that's great, but also, like, it's like, oh, no. So for me, that was kind of like that, too. I was like, this has to be an album. There's no way this can't be an album. So I got the plus sign when I took, you know, the urine test. And so
we're going to have an album.
Right. I was like, we're going to have an album. It's named Stank Face Standing Soldier. And I knew that was it. I knew it was like, so, and then the Standing Soldier part, my artist name is Matoa Yuhi, which is my Lakota name. And then that means a conquering bear in Lakota. And my government name is Mato Standing Soldier. And growing up, you know, kids didn't take a liking to that. And so, you know, I got teased a lot and pestered for it and whatnot. And so I always felt kind of shy about that name. Mm-hmm. So this, I didn't really notice it until recently why I called it that, Stank Face Standing Soldier. But I realized, like, oh, it's kind of, like you said, it's reclaiming that name and that lineage that I come from. And it's nice because, you know, serendipitously, the album is a lot about my family, too, the Standing Soldier. You know, in Lakota, it'd be like the Tiwahe, like the immediate family.
Tell me about the way those family members show up in the album sonically.
Yeah, so there are several generations represented sonically on the album, which I didn't really notice until I was done with it. But yeah, there are, I want to say, I think there's four generations in total.
The Standing Soldier, what's your Lakota name?
My Lakota name was given to me when I was a little infant, probably about 6 months old, and my Lakota name is Wa'ushilawi, which means she who has kindness for people.
So there's my generation, and then there's my dad's generation, and then there's my grandma's generation, and then there's my great-grandma's generation, and that all came to be because we got some old audio tapes digitized. They're cassette tapes. And I remember listening to these exact cassette tapes when I was 6 or 7 years old on my way to the res with my dad. And we're listening to them. And I kind of took stock of it. And he was saying, oh, this is your great grandma talking. I was like, oh, cool. And then come, you know, almost 20 years later, I find them again after my dad had passed and I'm listening to them. And it's like the beauty of the language and the speech too is so interesting, and it's very prescient too. There's like so much that my great grandma talks about that kind of comes to fruition. And so I was like, this has to be somewhere on the album, whether or not I actually use it or not. It's just this spirit has to be there. And it ended up working out, you know, just from a sequencing standpoint. It was really cool to interweave all the voices and stuff, and it was great.
And to put yours in there with them.
Yeah, definitely.
As your voice continues to change.
Mm-hmm.
So you also get to hear your first recordings too and listen to your own evolution. Is that hard to go back and hear something that you did, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and then compare it to what you're doing now? Or does it inform? Like, you're getting to know yourself now, but you're also getting to know the person who made that music in 2018.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of artists, I just got in such a like spirited argument, but loving spirited conversation with my buddy. He's like my little brother. We were talking about like our relationships to our old music. And he is very much like cut and dry. Like, it's not me anymore. It's gone. It's I'm deleting it because it's not me. And I was like, okay, both things can be true. That doesn't need to be you anymore. And it's better because it's not you anymore. You have an evolution. There's been a metamorphosis, and you can preserve that because that's all we got at the end of the day, are our sounds that we make. And yeah, we did not see eye to eye on that, but it's okay. I still love him and we're still cool.
If you understand that, you understand that the voice of your great-grandmother is also her in a moment of time.
Yeah, yeah. And what's super special, too, about that is, like, those recordings were actually for my dad. So my great-grandma is speaking to my dad in those. So she says Takojo, which means like, you know, grandson, grand, you know, grand child. And so she's speaking to him directly and talking about time that she had when she was, you know, younger. And she's talking about her grandma, which is insane. That's like six generations ago, right? And so, yeah, it was really special for me to listen to my great-grandma speak to my dad in this way. And they're both, you know, they're both gone. And so it's almost like I'm tapping into this conversation that's happening, you know, in the spirit world, just listening to them talk to one another. It was really special. And then there's call and responses, too. They're, like, talking to one another on the album, too, which is just such a cool thing to me.
So you lose your dad. Your dad dies in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the midst of what? You're in the midst of touring, making music. It's the pandemic. There's all kinds of things are happening at this moment of this profound loss. Where were you at that moment that stands out to you now 4 years later?
Yeah. So I had just graduated college in my living room, my mom's living room rather, on Zoom. And I basically was pretty lost. Didn't really have much direction. And then a scoring opportunity came up in LA. And so kind of talked with my parents and they're like, yeah, you should go out. So I was like, okay. So I left South Dakota to go back to LA. And I just kind of went back to the place I lived at in school. And then, yeah, so I was there for a couple months and then my dad passed. And so it was amidst, and it was strange too, because the director, like a month and a half before my dad died, her brother died. And so these two kind of massive losses really, like, you know, postponed this feature-length film that we were doing the music for. And so that was very bizarre too. There was like this alignment of grief and loss and everything like that. And that feature-length, it's called War Pony. And that film is all about that type of stuff. So it's kind of, you know, in tandem with that. But yeah, so I, you know, all that happened and it was a sudden death too. So I got on a plane, came back to South Dakota, and yeah, I was here for like a month and some change and then kind of going back and forth after that, and really have been since, honestly.
Yeah. So my brother died in 2020 in June.
Okay.
Your dad dies in the fall, right?
Yeah, September.
And now we're having this conversation and I'm coming at this new album listening for it because I know that there's something there and that's offering me something as a listener. So let's talk about grief and expression that's very, very personal for you, but then becomes, as soon as you release the music, universal and personal to me. Yeah. And that's an energy exchange that we don't have when we're in the same room. We're lucky enough to we get to talk to each other about it. But in general, you would never know that was happening with someone who is listening to your music. Someone is knocking about their own grief and is finding your music and saying, what is it? What's in here for me? Mm-hmm. As well as what is Mato doing next?
Yeah.
How do you think about what you put in the album and how it transfers to other people?
You know, for this album specifically, like it's in comparison to like Reservation Dogs. So I do the music for that show. That is very extrinsic.
We know.
Right.
And we're very excited about it.
Thank you. So that's very extrinsic. It's like, what does this story need? What does the scene need? What do the characters need? Yeah. So I'm very of service to the narrative. So if they need something that sounds like kind of like marimba, I'm like, okay, I'll learn that or I'll figure that out. Or if they need something that sounds like, you know, blues, I'm like, okay. For this album, for myself personally, it was I had to really, really like sit down and listen and also move through all of those really heavy topics. Because there's two things that kind of informed this album. Well, there's several, but like a lot of which are like heartbreak and grief. Mm-hmm. And both suck to like sit down. Because you want to do and it's so easy too to intellectualize those things and be like, well, you know, like, you know, when you have a loss, da 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 da, and you can read a book and you can listen to podcasts and you can watch movies. But there's nothing that really sorts that out until you sit with it and just. It's boring and it's hard. It's like the worst things. So for me, with my dad, like I would try to write about his loss or my loss and I would freeze. I literally experienced this like paralysis while trying to write let alone my words, but also the music, the melodies, because I scored it, or I produced everything on the record too. So it's like, okay, I write a chord progression. This feels like losing my dad. That's kind of how I had to sit with it. And I was like, wow, okay. And then I'd start writing it, and then I would record it. And it was really, really just a really like visceral experience. And so, yeah, that's kind of how, and you know, when I was sitting there as kind of like this tangible thing, I was like, okay, well, this, like, I went to such a personal, vulnerable place to make the music. I have to see it through in every aspect of the release. And also just the, you know, it has to be very, I want to show parts of myself because I want others to show parts of themselves. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I think there's such a reciprocity in artistry and, you know, fandomhood and everything like that. Cause like, I think about my favorite artists, and when they're brave and when they're courageous and when they show me, you know, chips in their armor, or they cry, or they show vulnerabilities, or just flaw too. There's a lot of flaw on this record, which I love. Like, I'm not trying to be, you know, this kind of like righteous figure. Like, I'm saying, like, I mess up, I'm not perfect, I fall susceptible to things, da 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 da. And that was really important to me too, because I didn't want to have it be this like, you know, preachy aspect of like going through grief. I was like, no, grief is ugly and it's hard and it's backwards and it's forwards and it's, you know, it's all these different things. And so I wanted the record to be that, because I think it's so important for folks who listen to feel requited in that regard, you know. And also, like, since 2020, I feel like it's been this like maelstrom of weird energy. Like, nothing's been normal.
And nothing has been normal.
Yeah. And this album is very, you know, emblematic of that. It's like the normalcy has gone. And when you lose somebody, like a parent or a family member, a brother, that is life. There's pre and post. And this album is the post of all of that experience.
How strong do you have to be? Because, like, what you put yourself through to make art. And to have that human experience in front of other people, but also in front of yourself,
mm-hmm.
in the room making it. What do you put yourself through to create it, and how strong do you have to be to, I don't want to say survive it, but survive it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is like, it, in a way, it's like bloodletting, like letting blood when they, you know, like, you know, let the wound kind of like be, I don't know, relinquished of any of the poisons or the toxins or anything like that. And so for me, that was a little bit of this. And it's not to be conflated with like, oh, I made a song about my dead dad, therefore I don't miss my dead dad anymore. It was like, it wasn't that cut and dry. It was very much like, it was more this kind of thing of, this is a very finite moment that you experience this type of grief. And in any capacity, it's, to me, it was vital to document it, to get it down. Because anytime you go through it again, you can kind of look at your notes. Or if anyone else is going through something, you can show them. And so for me, that was kind of it. And so I get a very, like, I go somewhere else when I make art. And so to go into those depths of my experiences and stuff, it was really a privilege. Like, I was really grateful to do that. Like, you know, I don't like this. I don't like the notion of like, you have to experience like trial and tribulation to make art, because I think a lot of artists do that, and they'll, like, you know, they'll wait for heartbreak, or they'll just create madness in the world and like justify it by making art. I don't believe that. I just think you should live with the degree of like reporting, just really report what you're going through. And for me, I had a lot of big life moments back to back to back to back to back. And then this album was kind of an amalgamation of all those things.
Your neighbors know my name, know my name, know my name. Your neighbors know my place, South Dakota.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We are talking with Mato Wayuhi today. His latest album is called Stank Face Standing Soldier. It's available now. Mato stopped by this summer to make music in our Leo P. Flynn Gallery. Those performances are available now on SDPB's YouTube page. He is a filmmaker, musician, producer. He's composer for the award-winning series Reservation Dogs. We talked about his life now, collaborating, moving, making things, coming home. Here's Mato Wayuhi.
I remember us as an encrusted gem, opal and aquamarine sheen, blinded all of our friends. She was picking my petals since a major was in the stem, gave her own soil a letter grade. We were surface level, that changed with everything we paved. I confirm I made a mess because I rushed it to engage. Found there were some wounds and bruises that she had in place that can't be healed by May, as I had some to match.
This magnificent like release, Fifi Fofam, and the video that accompanies it, has this heartbreak in it, but also has, tell me a little bit about making that. And then, of course, I want to ask you about the filmmaking of that video and the scene where the lighting changes and the, I see them as almost petals. I don't know what they are in reality, but in my vision, it's these petals are falling from the sky, which is, it has to be incredibly hard to pull off.
It was.
Cinematically, first of all, tell us about this song.
So this record, I was very close to not putting it out. I was so close to scrapping the whole record. And like recently too, like top of the year, I was like, it's over. And it was the only reason why I can confidently say is just because I thought too much time had passed and I didn't resonate with it. And so instead of putting out something that I didn't feel moving by anymore, I was like, I just wanna release it and I'll just make something else. And most, if not everyone in my life was like, stop, shut up, go make your come on, release it please. And then I was like, okay, y'all are right, because I'm the baby of the family, like I'm the baby boy, so I take a lot of, I heed the advice pretty, you know, fervently. And so anyway, I was like, okay, I need to organize what this could look like then, like a release, because I had released so many music videos before this, and but I wanted a new thing. I was like, okay, word. So I kind of thought about it, and with that song Fee Fi Fo Fum, I love that song because it encapsulates so much of what the album is about, and which is just great. And like, similarly, I made that song like, oh my God, like 4 days after breaking up with my ex. Yeah. And it was like, it was right there. It was just like raw. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was great. And it was like kind of an ode. It was an ode in a way, you know? And I was like really grateful to, cause I was like, I made a different wide scope of music, but that song was very special to me because it captured like the sentimentality of like a relationship and beauty and love. And my whole thing with that stuff too is like, sometimes people are in your lives for a moment or for a time, and it's okay when those things pass, and relationships can get really mucky and weird and stuff, and it, but that song felt so like special and so sacred in regards to like honoring the relationship. And hopefully folks, you know, who go through that could feel the same way. And so with the video, I directed all the videos this time for the album. And I love situational videos. Like I love when it's just like, there's not a lot of introduction. You're just in it. Like it's just a slice of life, go immersive. It's almost like voyeuristic a little bit. You're just like put into a scenario. You don't really know why you're there, what the situation is. And I really wanted to capture that. And I'm so proud of like the team and I for the video that we made, because I think it really, and I knew I wanted that, the jump or the match cut of, you know, us in the apartment and then to the, we just called it the void.
Yeah.
And I was very driven to see that and see slow motion and the yellow flower petals and whatnot. And yeah.
Descending from the sky, essentially. Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's, you know, that's what it feels like too. Like I've been thinking about this recently, like not even related to death, just more like, 'cause I move a lot, right? Uh-huh. And I just recently realized like, wow, there's a last time for everything. Like there's a last time I'm going to fill my gas up at that place. So there's a last time I'm going to use, you know, the back porch. And oftentimes you don't know it. And for me, that video visualizes and it explores those last moments you have with somebody. And not even, it doesn't have to be death related. It can just be anything. Like, there are last time you're like, I'm never going to speak to them again. And like, you don't realize until years later, like, wow, that was the last time we hugged. Or like, you know, and I thought that was so special. So in the video, yeah, the petals are, you know, descending. And then I hand him the letter and then he looks up and I'm gone.
Film, you studied film at USC.
Mm-hmm.
And the history of film and how we use it now. So you've thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
How does film change narrative?
For me, like, for the album, it was important to, I don't know, have things like, I needed to, that's such a good question. Film changes narrative in the way I think of just, like, having a visual choreography between the different symbols and the different motifs within what's written, because so film is literature, right? Film is that's where it kind of evolves from. So I think for me, like, directing this music video, like, I harped on my director of photography. I was like, we need static. We need static shots. Like, we don't need movement in the beginning or at all. We just need static, because that's what the song is. There's a staticness to it. There's like, I'm sitting down and telling you, I'm confessing to you, like, hey, you know, I was infatuated with you and then I wasn't. And it's because I rushed it and I still love you deeply. And yeah, and that I wanted that awkwardness and that like kind of like, just, I don't know, that moment that doesn't last long, you know, the kind of liminal space. And I wanted it to be a sit down kind of confrontational, like, I need to tell you something. And so I conveyed that through the visual language of like, keep it static. Don't make it cool music video shots and it zooms in or anything like that. I just want it static and like, just let it sit, let the performances take it away. And that's a lot of this record too. It's like the performance of it, you know. It's like very like, there's a lot of sonic elements. There's a lot of like bounciness and bigness and stuff, but it also is like, there's no vocal manipulation on my part. It's just mostly just me like saying how it is, saying what I'm going through and stuff. So the video, you know, the videos, I try to convey that as well.
Yeah. I think in the history of film too, some of the earliest things ever put on film were Indigenous people dancing.
Yeah.
And now you have the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, I have something to say.
Right.
All these years later, with this medium that at one point was turned in a very different way and used in a very different way, now you get to decide how to use it. Do you think about that?
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah. I'll say it here first, but I am very, very steadfast in. So I want to create an Indigenous Film Studies department at USC, my alma mater, yeah. And that's really intriguing to me. The parallelism between not only in South Dakota, the Wounded Knee Massacre in 1890, and then the first motion picture was like 1896, and it was of natives. Yeah, it was like natives doing, I think it was the chicken dance or some one of those. But yeah, and then so the through lines between colonization and just Hollywood, like the filmmaking, mm-hmm. are they can't be separated, right? And so that is really fascinating to me. And I feel like in the last 10 years or so, we've seen kind of what folks I think deem as like Indigenous, the Renaissance of like filmmaking. But I don't know. I think about that sometimes in that phrase, because it can be kind of, it can kind of trivialize what's gone before, right. You know, because there's been poetry movements, there's been music movements, there's been all sorts of arts movements. It's just kind of when non-natives decided they wanted to pay attention, that's kind of what people deem as like a renaissance. I'm like, we could have had reservation dogs in the 80s. Like, it could have always existed, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's so many, it's all attributed to so many like Black creators who kind of paved the way for a lot of different other creators of color to, you know, because like there wouldn't be a reservation dogs without Atlanta, you know, the mm-hmm. Donald Glover series. And mm-hmm. So it's paying homage to that as well, and also understanding that like, yeah, they're, the ties between Indigenous culture and filmmaking are, cannot be separated.
Yeah.
The Hello Kitty pets dispenser them. The memories I hold in my chest near and dear forever. Borrow too many of your tomorrows. I apologize again. I know the sorrow's hard, but you're still a gem. I've been dealing with the fee-fi-fo-fum. Every little thing is making my nose run. I've been dealing with the fee-fi-fo-fum. Every little thing is making my nose run. Making my nose run. Making my nose run. Coming home, coming home. Ran out of road to run. I am somebody's son. Mama, I'm coming home again. Ran out of road to run. I am somebody's son. Mama, I'm coming home again. Ran out of road to run. I am somebody's son.
I've been dealing with the fee-fi-fo-fum. Every little thing is making my nose run.
When my father passed, I flew back first class. One of the first times I ever did that. You know, grief don't come with a roadmap. And it don't take cash. But it won't take back all of my remembrance. You made me a better man. The happiest I've ever been. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Every little thing is making my nose run. Mama, I'm coming home again. I've been dealing with the fee-fi-fo-fum. Every little thing is making my nose run. Mama, I'm coming home again.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Award-winning musician and producer Mato Wayuhi returned to the SDPB studios this summer in conjunction with the release of his album Stank Face, Standing Soldier. You can see his in-studio performances now on SDPB's YouTube page. For this part of our conversation, we welcome Mato's longtime musical collaborator, Jacob Lemmy. Before we get to the conversation, just a little bit about the song you'll hear, written by American music legend Neil Young. Neil Young wrote Harvest Moon for his wife of many years. She was a dancer. And Young says on his archives website that she, quote, floated around when she was happy. Here's Mato Wayuhi. You are going to perform in our studio space here also a Neil Young cover, Harvest Moon, which is one of my favorite songs.
Harvest Moon. I love that song.
And I'm really deep into his latest release, which is a very stripped down, acoustic, simplified Neil Young where everything kind of sounds new again if you've been listening to him for a long time. Why did you pick this song to play? What's in it? What resonates in it for you?
Use this moment to introduce Jake as well. Jake's in the studio. You want to say hi?
Hi, happy to be here, everybody.
So Jacob Lemmy is a wondrous musician. He's also a good friend of mine. We've been working together since really the beginning of my career.
Yeah.
And so the question was why we're doing Harvest Moon. But we rehearsed it yesterday. Can you explain what it was like afterwards or just after playing it?
It was kind of a meditative experience, I thought. I mean, Neil Young songs are simple, but like there's a lot of passion that like needs to be put into it to actually like make it a good cover rather than just be like a cover. What I like about Mato is like he's able, like even if he doesn't like necessarily know it, he can challenge me as an artist to like kind of keep creating in a sense. Or just keep playing. And I mean, I think that song is like, I'd say the song is like kind of like a meditative experience, just to kind of see like how far, like look back and like how far like we've kind of come as people and just musicians.
Yeah.
The album comes out on, you know, Friday, May 24th, which is the full flower moon, of the full flower moon. So harvest moon, flower moon. I thought that was cute. And also, yeah, the storytelling of that song is really, I think it's in relation to my album in a way. And I like that, you know, looking back, kind of being, you know, recalling a past thing and thinking about it. And yeah, so I love that song. It's like hypnotic, like just rehearsing it and playing it. Oh my God. I get goosebumps every time, like literally every time.
Because it's very different than what you would make and put in the world. So how is it embodied differently for you? How does it feel different physically?
I think it's, I don't know, there's some music theory stuff about it, I don't know. But there, like, when the chorus comes back around, like, because I'm still in love with you, I want to see you dance again, because I'm still in love with you on this harvest moon.
Because I'm still in love with you, I want to see you dance again, because I'm still in love with you.
Like, that is, like, yeah. Oh my God, what? And also, like, the beauty and the simplicity of, like, I'm in love with you. It's not I want to be with you again. It's not I want to elope with you. It's not that I want to have sex with you. It's not that I want to fight you again. It's like, I want to watch you dance. That is, like, oh my God, is that poetry?
Yeah.
And that, to me, is so beautiful. And yeah, it's that celebratory. There's like the poignancy. I think the word like poignant gets like a negative connotation. It's like, oh, that's like sad or like, oh, like, ow. But the poignancy of that song is beautiful to me. Like, we are no longer together, and we have made amends in some regard to what happened to our heartbreak. And it's not even that I want to be with you again. It's just I want to know that you're okay, and I want to see you dance again.
I want to celebrate, oh, see it shining in your eyes.
Yeah, so performing it is like, oh my God, this goes out to all the exes, all the past lovers, and all the future lovers, and anyone who's experienced that stuff. Like, yeah, and playing it live at shows, people will like lose it. Like, they're not even because they know it, they're just like, it's just,
what is that?
Yeah.
They know it now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's powerful about that song itself. It's like, it doesn't matter like how many times like you've listened to it. Like you've never listened to it before, or like you've listened to it over and over again. I think everybody has that sense of nostalgia that kind of comes out in them that makes them think about all those relationships like they've had like prior in their lives, like current and future.
I feel like you just dip, it's like you dip your hands into a river and it was always there. Like the first time I heard that song, I was like, oh, there it is. Like, it just existed. And I don't know how he did that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. I feel the same way the first time I heard your album. I think it was a Tiny Desk entry. The first time I heard it, I was like, well, this, of course this is here.
Yeah.
I'm just happy that I stumbled upon it finally. And you never forget where you were the first time you heard.
Yeah. True.
You know, a song like that.
Yeah.
There are geniuses among us, Jake. What is it like to play with this one?
I love the guy to death, man. Like I said, he's been able to kind of push me as an artist myself to like just continue to create, like find that motivation to just kind of like just be able to put out something, like no matter like if it's like on an off day, or it's just like you're just in that moment and you want to like do something. And also he's just like all around genuine person. I don't mean to be like gushing or anything, but like, no, I mean that genuinely from the bottom of my heart. I mean, I've worked with a lot of people to like have conversations with Motto and just to like record stuff. I mean, it's just been an eye-opening experience for me that I cannot like trade for the world.
One of the things I think about your career is the cliche would be that you're not going to be okay because of the attention, because of the spotlight turning toward you. And then every time I meet you and interact with you in person or listen to your music, I think, oh, he's better than the rest of us. Like, you're okay. I know not every day at every moment. But in that vein, how are you handling the fact that you're also just a person trying to figure out life and politics and what you're going to have for breakfast and how to take care of yourself when you're exhausted and how to handle what you're doing and when? And how's that going for you? Because it's very important to me that you're okay.
Yeah, thanks for looking out. Thank you for your words too, Jake. Appreciate it. I've been learning a lot about that kind of self-regulation. I think that's been important because I think there was like since the pandemic, like, I mean, I was very privileged to like what happened even like post my dad dying, which was like basically, you know, that happened and then 2021 and then I, you know, started Reservation Dogs and life has just kind of been like since then. It's been a lot of movement and a lot of, you know, shows and like things and a lot of energy, a lot of like momentum and, you know, kind of frenziness, like a lot of frenziness. And just recently there's a moment, it felt like going really fast on a skateboard and pushing and pushing and then jumping off the skateboard and expecting you to just land perfectly but without any regard to physics. And so I jumped off the skateboard and I hit my face like wah on the floor. And, you know, because I had just taken a break, like work had stopped and I couldn't distract myself from work anymore. And there's a great book by Bell Hooks. It's called The Will to Change. And it's about like men. Every man needs to read that. Every man needs to read a lot of things. But that book has helped me understand a lot about the patriarchy and also just how men, you know, basically like manipulate and take advantage of their careers by way of not really evolving emotionally or paternally or spiritually or in relationships. It's like, well, you know, you can compartmentalize it through your work, and it can be really denigrative to like every other part of your life. And so there was a moment where that came to life where I was like, yeah, the work stopped, and I was like, oh, I don't know, are these other aspects of my being really being nourished, or is it just this forward facing stuff? And so, yeah, that was like a big moment for me. It was recent too. I was like, that kind of was in tandem with like, I don't know if I'm going to put this album out.
Right. Yeah.
Cause yeah, it all stopped and I was sitting there alone and I was like, wow, oh my God. Like I traveled through the grief and the uncertainty of like these things I can point to, but so much of life is the mercurial, like you don't really know, it changes, da 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 da. And I think that's adulthood too, just growing up and like understanding that no one's gonna be there for you the way that you can be there for you. And I had to learn that. And my family was really great to me too. They, you know, they're really supportive and just, you know, helping out with stuff. Cause like I don't go to them for anything when it comes to my art or my career. I don't say that in a mean way. It's just more like, I know what I want. Like I'm very specific in what I want. But with that, it was like, I don't know if I feel like a loser. I don't have a place. I don't have a stable living. I'm always moving. I don't have a dog. I don't have plants. I don't have like no domicile. I can't nest. I don't have any partners. I feel like just a vagabond. And so, yeah. It's been nice to like understand that more about myself and figure that out.
My great grandmother used to say, nobody will take care of yourself like you will. Mm-hmm. And I used to hate that because I thought I didn't believe it. I was like, I don't buy that. Like, of course, we are here to take care of each other. Yeah. We are here to be in community. And then one day, because I thought it was like a independent, like a toxic independence is what I was interpreting it as. And then one day I was like, oh no, wait. Now I understand what it means for me. I don't know what she intended, but what you said in the sense that I'm allowed to take care of myself in a way that nobody else is allowed to do. And that's a mantle that I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah, it's tough.
At my age to figure out what does that mean when the world needs things from you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beyond just, I need to eat, so I need to have a job. The world also asks of us all these things.
Yeah.
And in art, I think people overlook the generosity of it.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I feel like you gotta be, you have to like refill the tank in any respect or any way that feels. Yeah, because you're right. It is a very, like, you kind of have to, there's like this degree of like prostration. It's like, I have to give myself up. I have to sacrifice a lot to make what I do. And any artist in that regard has to do that. And I think it's the responsibility of the artist to understand how you can, yeah, refill that and keep it going. And for me, I didn't have a way. It just was like, oh, more work, like do more, say yes more. And then I'd be sitting there like out of my mind, like be so exhausted, but feeling like fulfilled. It's like this like thing of exhaustion. It's like, oh, it's good if you're exhausted, but it's like, no, it's not. Like, don't, like, you're going to be, I had this thought, I was like, I'm going to be 40 years old one day and be like, I'm so exhausted and alone and I have like this career stuff, but like, that's all, nothing to point to, no one to point to. And I was like, okay, I got it. So since then I've been able to understand that more. And it's, yeah, like you said too, it just makes the human experience better, because you're tending to your garden, you know, figuratively, like checking your plants and changing the soil and stuff. And yeah, investing in those relationships and stuff. And I'm like the, centering myself is like, you know, I'm literally on a press run right now, so I'm grateful to do that. But in my outside world, like, I'm a cheerleader for my friends and my family. Like, I love showing up. Like, I like, that's my favorite thing to do. Like, I'm not one to take the room if I don't need to, you know. So I love that. So I love, and I've learned to do that in the past year or more, you know. And it's you know, going to my friends' shows or going to different things, or, you know, just going on outings and not having it to be work-related and stuff has been really important for me.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you want to say about the release and the album?
I think if you could, to all the listeners out there, listen to it in one sitting if you can.
Yeah.
I think that's my one ask. Make it all you want. It's all yours. Paint the world with the songs that I've made. And... yeah, I think that's... try it one time. Try it sitting it through just one time, listening to it. You know, find a place, find a snack, find a person to listen to it with. And,
from my tattoo was borrowed to write you some letters. Yeah. Travel through the galaxies. Places that you gotta be. From the center of the sun to edges of expanse till the moon fills again.
Music from Mato Wayuhi, his latest release is called Stankface Standing Soldier. It's available now. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at STPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.
Travel through the galaxies, places that you gotta be. From the center of the sun to edges of expanse till the moon fills again. Softly spoken in my dreams, you hardly knew how much you mean. Ink from my tattoo was borrowed to write.